And there's no better way to show this by setting an example.
Well, and actually when I come to give a talk, you know, I don't prepare anything. Why? Because I just talk at the moment what I have in mind. And this is also result of following the teaching that you need to be aware of impermanence. Because like many things in life, you prepare a lot and then later you look back and you say, oh, it's all wasted. Maybe when you are not prepared, actually it's best to cope with the problem at hand that way. Yeah. And also, one thing is, you know, usually people talk, you know, they maybe have something in mind already, you know, they're planning what to talk next. But around 1990, when I went to Virginia to give a talk, I realized that when I talk, I have nothing in mind. What you hear is just exactly what's there. Yeah. But that's the result of practice. You cannot force it, you know. Yeah. Well, so why do you want to face the impermanence of life? Because basically, you know, we all know life is full of all kinds of problems. How do we handle it, you know? We try many ways, and because more or less we try to find the best for ourselves. And then you find out that things will not go as you would like it to be, because everyone wants the best for himself. So it's like one person fighting with the whole world. Everything is against your wishes. And Buddha said the way to, you know, solve all these problems is first, not by just accepting some teachings. The first thing you do is you look at life itself. Learn from reality, you know. And why this is important, because when we look at things, more or less, we look only from certain point of view. We are confined by ourselves. When you don't see things as they are, then how can you solve the problems? The first step is look at life as it is. And one important aspect that he brought out is that, well, everything changing, you know. Everything changing because everything that occurs is result of many conditions that happens to be and works fine together, then there are this or that happening. But since it takes so many conditions, and so no one can really control all the situations, all the conditions. So you're bound to, you know, go some way that you didn't expect. And also, but by pointing this out, it doesn't mean that, oh, then you become scared, oh, look far ahead, or I'll get sick, I'll get old, I'll die. You know, like, what's the use of keep on living, you know? The end is inside, you know? End of the tunnel. Yeah. But the other aspect of looking at life as impermanent is that since it's impermanent, that means it can be changed. And everything is conditional, so if we work on the right conditions, we can expect more or less that you will go to a better end. That's one another aspect of impermanence. So the point of bringing impermanence out is not to scare you, but to show you that change for the better is possible. This is one important aspect. And the other aspect is that once you realize that eventually things are going that way, you know, then what's the next point is that you have an opportunity to look back and review the life as it is and say, what's the point? You see, usually you are too busy with what's going on right now, you know, preoccupied with the immediate questions, and there are so many, so complicated, so you forget about in the long run what will be the end. But now, when you are sick, or when you suddenly encounter accident unexpectedly, then you kind of like wake up and say, oh, what if, you know, what if? Then you look back and say, oh, I cannot just go on like this. I will not be prepared for the inevitable ends. So actually why Buddhism is precious to us is because it's a teaching that comes out after someone has reflected on life. He sees that, oh, what's the use? Even the throne of a kingdom is worthless eventually. If I cannot solve all these problems, my family, my everything eventually will go. So I have to find some way out that makes life worth living, and also that I can help others. Because all of us have same problems. It's a universal problem, and he becomes a Buddha because he found a solution so he can help us even nowadays, 1,000 years later. And he, you see, we all know there are problems in life, so usually we say, oh, for this we have to improve economy, we have to improve health, we have to do this, do that. But we all also know that these are very transient solutions. You try to solve this problem, another problem will come, right? And no one can fix all the problems. Politicians always tell you big ideals, like what they do, you know? So on the one hand, it is like this. On the other hand, is even if you, like your own child, suppose you provide them with everything, but that doesn't mean that you can give them happiness. That doesn't mean that you can help them to have peace of mind, right? So eventually, real help to others is to show them the way that they can have peace of mind, they can stand on their own, be independent, and be able to face all kinds of problems in life and still live a positive, active life. That is the real help. But this is not easy because it's not something people can say, oh, you just do ABC. It's not that simple. It's something that, why do we treasure the Dharma practices? Because those spiritual practices, they unknowingly, in ways beyond your conception, you know, gradually loosen your prejudices, your inclinations, your attachments, let all those evaporate, you know, in the background. And then when you have less and less prejudices, less and less preferences or hatred or all kinds of, you know, personal things, then you see life as it is. Then you see that we are all the same. Then you know how to live, not just for yourself. It's useless. Who can just help one person be good? No way. It has to be the whole community helping one another. Then we can live peacefully, happy. So that's the, but how to do this is through, because it's useless just say, oh, this is right, and you accept this. But if you do the practices, gradually you see what is really the situation. Then you will change. The whole person change. So it's a lifetime work. Everyone, you know, as much as you do, as much as you will benefit from through these kind of practices. But what are the basic principles? The basic principle is that Buddha, when he attained enlightenment, he realized that what's the root of the problem is because the moment we start to think, we start to recognize there's difference, that's the moment the mistakes occur. what is the reality that he entered when he entered the realization is that actually all are in oneness. All are in oneness. We think of ourselves as, you know, different persons, distance, time limitation, all kinds of things. But he entered the state that actually all these are just results of, from first grasping like, oh, this is me, this is not me. From that moment on, then all the mental, you know, construction are confining you. And it's not only a mental thing. Because of your mental thinking, your body becomes tense. And the inner air passage, all that kind of thing, becomes tense and twisted, all wrong, all went wrong. That's why we feel, oh, so much burden in life, you know. Life is so difficult. But when you do the Dhamma practices, in addition to feeling that peace of mind increases, relaxation increases, also physically you feel that too. Your body loosens. Yeah. And but this is so far away from our reality. Our reality is each one on his own, on her own, you know. So what I can do is only tell you, what as we can understand, Buddha realized. And based on that principle that actually there's no limitation, all are in oneness. Based on that, if you believe in this, you do the practices. So when you do the practices, you are not doing it for yourself. Because as long as you keep thinking about yourself, you cannot escape from this cage. So you have to think of, oh, I'm doing it for all sentient beings. With this kind of attitude, you start to do the practices. And gradually, you find peace in yourself, and gradually your person change, and then gradually, with this experience, you can tell others, oh, this is really beneficial. You know, if I have no experience of practices, how can I tell you and convince you? No way, just empty words. But through the practices, you have the experiences, then you explain to people why this is beneficial. I can tell you, oh, when it's loosening up, if you do the chanting practices regularly for a long time, oh, at first, the shoulders loosen up first. Why? Because when our mind started to, you know, build the cocoon's net, the cocoon's, it's very subtle inside. And gradually, it wind up, become a bigger, bigger one. And this is the outermost area, see? So when you loosen from the outer, and then you gradually loosen inside. Yeah. So if I tell you this, and you start to do the practice, and you experience that, then you know, oh, this is real, you see? And then, like for myself, before I got PhD, I started study Buddhism and do the practices and do Dharma services. And by following my guru and start doing, you know, publication, mailing, all that kind of thing. And then after I get my PhD, the next day I return all my logic books to the library, donate them to the library. Because I decided to, you know, go into Dharma practice and service. And after so many years, I got PhD 1984, so 30 years. After 30 years, you know, people ask me for prayers. Why? Because when I pray, you know, many people can sense the benefits immediately. But you see, who are those people asking me to pray? Not people by my side, no. Taiwan, Malaysia, China, I'm in San Francisco, Colombia. People ask me a prayer and they sense it immediately. How can you explain this? I have no internet or anything connected to you.
But if you remember what Buddha taught, say, actually there is no limitation, all are in oneness, then you know that it's a matter of your mind binding yourself. If you can loosen that bondage, you know, then they can reach you and you can reach out to them. That's all. Really in oneness. So it's worth your trying, and also no one has a monopoly over this. It's public property. Be free to take part in it. But all these are still just talks that cannot really help you. The way to help you is, of course, one aspect is to start doing some karma practices. That I come to later. Why? I still want to come back to the impermanence first. Because without a keen sense of impermanence, no one will do the karma practices seriously and regularly and consistently. And
Right.
3 days later, you forget everything. So, but how to develop the sense of impermanence? Talks are not so effective. The real way is one is when I started doing this, I find a small book, notebook, and I started to put down all the names of persons that I have personally met, personal acquaintance. I actually met you. Then I may not know your name. I put up, oh, someday somewhere I saw someone that I know passed away. I started to do this because I want to put these names in front of Buddha to pray for them. And on the other hand, this is real teaching on impermanence, right? The ones you have actually seen. Oh, I saw this one, oh, gone. So I made that one, gone. That's real lesson. This is better than any empty talk. This is one way. I call it keeping a record of impermanence. That's one way. The other way is to visit the cemeteries. Don't go there just because someone you know passed away. No. Go there whenever you have time. For me, every morning, I go there, take 1 hour walk. Good for my health, good for my mind. And you know what? In the cemetery, you don't just walk, you try to read the tombstones. Then you know what's one person's life. When he was born, when he passed away, that's all. That's your life story. You worry about so many things, but eventually, only. And in Taiwan, you know, they have those pagodas for cremated ashes, you know, and they did some statistic studies. After 50 years, no visitors. So even if you keep the ashes there, 50 years later, nothing.
No visitors.
Right, no visitors. Yeah. So, but, you know, very strange. If you take a walk in the cemetery and you repeat Buddha's name or Om Mani Padme Hum for them, then on the one hand, it cultivates your compassion for the fellow beings. On the other hand, very strange. Like, after I take a walk through the cemetery, when I came out, I feel lighter. Because whatever you saw was big deal, you know, when you enter. After you take that walk, no deal. So actually it has this effect. Yeah. So go there and take walks. Mm-hmm. It's very good spiritual practice. Yeah. For keen sense of impermanence. Yeah. And after you do this kind of practice, you're aware of impermanence and you want to find peace of mind, be happy in life, then you have to every day, like a first grader, when the teacher gave assignments, you have to finish it today. You do your Dharma practice like that. Baby, you know, I set a certain time that I most likely you won't be disturbed. And at that time, I do certain practices. And beginning, usually two kinds of basic practices. One is called repetition or chanting. You just repeat like name of Buddha, like we say Amitabha, or Om Mani Padme Hum, that's a mantra, you know. You set a number for yourself, or every day I do at least 1,000 times, that kind of thing. And the other kind is to do prostrations. Prostrations is because on the one hand it's exercise of the body, on the other hand it's when you believe in Buddha and you do this, he can actually help you to reduce your bad karmas. Help you, yeah, because whatever you are going to encounter in life, you know, most of them are due to whatever you have done in this life or in past lives. See, but no worldly way can reduce those for you. But when you show respect to Buddha, you know, and they can actually help you. Yeah. So these are the basic ones I recommend. And my talks usually are very short, like this. You know, why do I carry a lot? But the important thing is you know that it's from the heart. And no other intention except to tell you what's really beneficial that I know. That's all. So I hope that you know, and I have all these cards here, and then you find the website. I have writings in Chinese, but most of them I have translated also into English. So no problem for you, you know.
Right.
And then you can read, and also my writings are like my talks, easy to comprehend, because I don't try to use a lot of Buddhist terminology that very difficult to comprehend, you know. You have to do serious studies. But what's the use for us, you know? So I just tell you, you know, person to person, you know, we as ordinary people, we all have same problem, but I found this beneficial, so I recommend that you try. That's all. That's the message. And then here, let me tell you, like this one. This is the Medicine Guru Buddha. And this one is a small statue. A Buddhist friend in Taiwan found it somewhere and he got it and put it at home. And when I was in Taiwan, that's long years ago, he asked me to consecrate the statue. And that morning I did a consecration. That evening I already went back to San Francisco. And that evening, Buddha appeared to him, huge, and hit him very hard on the head, you know. And the strange thing is, after that hit, you know, whole day, he didn't need to go to the restroom, and his body feel very hot, and his tongue feel like burned already, so hot. So he called me, he said, what happened? I said, oh, Buddha, after the consecration, Buddha arrived into that statue. And this image has helped many people healing Buddha. Once there was a lady, old lady, passed away now in Switzerland. She was a writer, and because of typing, she needed operation on the wrist. And right after the operation, I sent her a bigger one of this image, and they received it, and her friend said, oh, let me go out and get a frame for you. And when the friend went out, he, without thinking, she put the image there, you know. And she actually feel the pain gone. Yeah, of course, she still felt the stitches, you know, but actually, at that time, she was very painful. Right after operation, pain just went away. This one has many miraculous happening. Yeah, this one. And this one is, I took this photo following a dream. In the dream I saw, this is called a protected hallway door, a Buddhist Dharma protector. in the dream, it was a very strange dream. In the dream, this half I know it's not a dream. In another dream part, the protector appeared. Whole thing go, even the body, eyes, everything go. Golden one, bigger than ordinary human being. On this side, on the other side is the dream. In the dream, someone take a photo of me doing this. This is a sign of giving fearlessness. And what is the use of this one? Is because at that time, some people, they have ghost problems. They ask me to pray. And this protector show up, and the significance of the dream is that I'll help you handle this kind of problem. You just take a photo. So this one, you know, when you have ghost problem, carry it with you or put it in the room, and it can really help you rid of that problem. Yeah. And this one, the painting was done by a disciple in Malaysia. That's me a few years ago. So no beard here. And some bookmarkers, a Buddhist in Taiwan, every month he makes some bookmarkers or cards and took materials from my writings. So, yeah. And we also have the website up there. Yeah, so help yourself to this and feel free to ask me questions, you know.
Pray.
Oh, pray is like this. One is like you just believe, then you talk like you want to talk. That's one way of prayer. The other kind is ritual, you know. They set certain formula, you repeat those formulas, you know. But one main thing about the Buddhist teaching is that usually, even in Christianity, it's the same. When you say a prayer, how do you know if the prayer is in accordance with the Bible or just your personal, you know, wishes? You know, you're supposed to pray according to the Bible, but that's difficult, right? Very hard. But the Buddhist way is like this. Just try to think of this is for all beings. For example, you say, oh, I'm pregnant, I want to have a safe delivery. Then you don't just say for yourself. You say, may all the pregnant women have safe delivery. See, expand your mind to all. Then it's on the right track.
So you don't pray for yourself.
Yeah, because that will only increase your problem.
You pray because for all this.
You say, I want myself to be better, but your enemies say, no, no way. And you have enemies from your past life, so no way. And Buddha said, oh, you have not seen the light, how can I help you? The light is to see the whole thing, right? You see only yourself and you don't see the light.
Yeah, when you're thinking of only yourself, then it's like you're separating yourself from other people.
Right, right.
You're focusing
right.
on you.
Right, right.
But when you include everybody else, now you're in one.
Right.
You're praying for everybody.
Right. And when we pray for only ourselves, we tend to overlook too many things. Then it cannot be the right choice, you see. You don't see the whole picture, you just say, I want this, better this way. No way. That's not the way. Yes?
I have some pests sometimes, they come into my apartment. They're roaches, right?
Uh-huh.
And I know you're not supposed to kill them, but I know they carry disease.
Right.
I don't want to kill anything, but
I know.
Do I ask for forgiveness if I do that?
Even better way is this. You still try to keep sanitary for yourself because it's also important you are also one being to be protected, right? But you realize that in so doing, you may harm them, so you say Om Mani Padme Hum for them, for Buddha to take care of them. Yeah, that's the solution, better way, yeah.
Yes.
What are the main spiritual principles of Buddhism?
The basic reality, as Buddha said, sees it, is oneness of all, you know. And so, out of that, the principle that follows is, on the one hand, to be selfless. Because when you are mindful of only yourself, you're so confined, you don't see the oneness of all. And the other, on the other hand, is compassion and tolerance. You accept others, you put up with others, you try to be in harmony with others and help them. Yeah. These are the basic ideas. And ways to cultivate compassion is like, for example, you try to help many people, but you don't have the means, right? But you can do what? You put out some food for the birds, peanuts for the squirrels, you know? Do this kind. That will also help you too. Because, for example, before I do this kind of practice, you know, well, if I see a bird at most, I say, oh, looks nice, or the sounds good, you know. That's for my enjoyment only, right? But after I download, you know, I say, oh, have you eaten? I worry about it, whether they're hungry or not. That's a change of mind in me through this practice.
Way, how do you, what have you noticed about your own heart? How do you experience, you know, seeing others and just things in life? I mean,
the more I receive requests for prayers for disease, you know, more I sense that it's so wrong to and so small to just think of oneself. That's a real feeling, you know. You know, you need to always keep your mind open to the whole reality.
You know? For you, I mean, does it become almost reflexive rather than something you have to?
The main point of Dharma practice is that it's not by your mind holding to certain ideas, no. Yeah. That's useless, see. What if I become senile, right? Then it's useless. No, it's not like that. It's a complete change of the being, you know. It's not dependent on whether I can speak to you or not, no. Yeah. And actually, if you want to talk about Dharma practices seriously, actually, to be able to really sense the benefits of Dharma practices, you have to work to the stage when it's natural for you that you have no thoughts. Naturally, you don't think anything. No thoughts arise. Your mind becomes so free of, you know, thoughts. Then, above that, the spiritual thing can really show up.
When you say free of thoughts, is it
literally no thoughts?
Totally, right.
Yeah. I mean, but no, effortlessly. You don't have to say I don't want to think. No. That's still a thought.
Well, I mean, you can chase after the thoughts, but
you just they're not arise.
They just go. You say
no. They just don't arise.
They're not.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Just gone. But for those, you know, you takes long years and you have to do it seriously. Like when I started to do, I do in Chinese, you know, Namo Amida, Namo Amitofo, that means Namo Amitabha Buddha in Chinese, 10,000 a day. And for 3 months later, I started to feel loosened from the shoulder, outer corner. of course, you know, I cannot expect everyone to go into it so deeply at once, you know. So my suggestion is set up a time regularly every day to do a little bit. Gradually, you know, like jogging, you know, at first you run one round, one lap, and then more and more gradually. Yes?
How do you handle, the more you're doing the prayers and you're praying for everybody, how do you handle when you have particular certain people still constantly like right by you, negative energy, you know, trying to put bad things on you?
Yeah.
You know, kind of like.
Right.
That.
I know. The problem, the solution is not through concentrate on them, but rather include them in the whole that you are praying for. See? That way you go beyond. If you concentrate on that particular one, then you cannot help them either. The only way that you can really help them is because now your mind is so broad, you worry about all beings, and then your concern is in oneness with Buddha's compassion. Then Buddha's compassion reach them through your compassion. Yeah. That's the solution. Yeah. And that's also why I can pray for others. Because it's not because I'm Superman or I'm different from you. No. I'm just the same as you. But I have learned to, you know, always think about for all and ask only for Buddha's help, not my help. I don't know how to help you. I don't know what's best for you, see? So how can I decide for you, right? I don't. I just say, oh, someone has a problem, you know? But I'm not just praying for this person. I'm praying for all. And then Buddha's power will go through his way. So you can also follow this. If you are doing it selflessly for people, not because they are related to you, not because of any particular reason, but just because, for example, you saw on TV, oh, today, certain place, big accident, you know, so many suffer, so many die. And then you say, oh, Buddha helped them. You know? This kind of selfless practice, you know, can really benefit.
Kind of like right along with what she said too, is that, you know, you experience things in life. I do chanting, Vidara chanting, and it makes me feel better after. But somewhere along the day, just that negative energy starts to come back again. So how do you
That is because you have not been used to totally praying for all. See, you are still within your circle, so they will come back. But just keep doing, and gradually, you know, you will widen up, and then you will go. Yeah.
In reference to how we offend others here, and kind of like get paid back on earth for what we do to others, do you believe that?
Oh,
that takes
place? Yes, because it's causal, you know, karma. What you do, you know, they become involved, and they want to take it back. Retaliate, of course. However, once you start to do the Dharma practice in the light of bodhicitta, that means you praying for ultimate salvation of all beings. If you do it in this way, then those become very small things, so they are easy to get rid of. See, because you're no longer within that trap, you know, each other holding the other's name, you know. You're free from that. You're working for all beings. Then you can escape from that. Yeah.
But as far as us being, like, are we forgiven for what we do good to others around us?
Oh, that is because,
do,
like,
what we do wrong to others around
us? That is because, like, you have done your military service, so the president give you a presidential pardon.
Right.
So your minor problems are all forgiven.
All forgiven.
Yeah.
You do the ceremonies at the cemeteries. What is that?
Oh, it's called Poa. Poa is Tibetan name. Tibetan name, the meaning is transference of consciousness. It means the deceased consciousness originally is still tied by his or her own karma. So, supposed to be reborn in some realms and cannot become free, you know, still going through the cycles of life and death. But through this ritual, with the blessing of Buddhas and the lineage lamas, then they are set free from this bondage, from the karmas, and can go to Buddha's pure land at once. Yeah, but of course, some with very heavy karma, they cannot be forgiven so easily. But they can still, through this Dharma connection, you know, go to a better realm, have better opportunity to learn Dharma and eventually gain liberation. Yeah.
But the ones that they get liberated, they still have to reincarnate.
Oh, no, depends. Some with very light karma, they really go to Buddha's pure land. They don't need to reincarnate. Mm-hmm.
Very advanced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I mentioned today, earlier today, the virtual cemetery visits through internet visit to cemeteries. Many years ago, a disciple in Malaysia, she used to send me many cemetery links, you know, for me to visit. And once she has those prepared, but she was busy, she didn't send them to me. Mm-hmm. And she dreamed of ghosts coming from a cemetery in Australia, telling her, "We have been waiting for 500 years. Mm-hmm. Hurry up." So it's really helpful to them. They want it. Yeah. So, like reincarnation. Sometimes you see they are in the cemetery 500 years, still cannot go, still there.
And so for them to be released, someone has to pray for them.
Yeah,
or this ritual.
Yeah, yeah. The
because if not, they're still they can't do it for themselves.
Yeah, they themselves don't have the spiritual power to become free, and for the spiritual power to go to reach them, there need to be some connection. Someone has to mention them to the right source. Because the Buddhist teaching is everything is conditional. So they lack that connection, you see. That's one condition. Once they get that through, then the power reaches them. That's the idea. Mm-hmm. So that also shows that how you can help other beings by praying for them. There's actually help there. Yeah.
So when you do your walks through the cemetery, are you and you're looking at the tombstones and you just, like you said, it's only the name and the dates. Do you pray for them?
Or you can just simply repeat Buddha's name or Om Mani Padme Hum, the mantra.
Oh, just.
Yeah, that's good enough. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually, you see. When you read the tombstones, long time ago, when how come only one day? Because some born dead. Oh, how come mother, same day? Then there are stories behind, you see. Then you see, husband and wife, 40 years difference. Many life stories are there. You think they are only 2 days, they tell you many things. Yeah.
But when you pray, you actually mention the words, help these people.
Now I don't need. Just tell me the problem. That's it. I don't even have to say anything. Just tell me the problem. Yeah, and then they get the result. Yeah. Or of course, sometimes I'll say a few mantras. Yeah.
No, I mean when you go to your visits to the cemetery.
Yeah, no. When I go there, I take my morning walk and I also do my daily practice at the same time. I have my daily practice.
There is something peaceful about a cemetery.
Yeah.
Is there something,
It's really peaceful.
It is. Last Easter, that was the Easter Sunday, went to my father's lot and her sister and my uncle. And there were a lot of people visiting that day because it was Easter, and it seemed there was something very tranquil about it, very peaceful.
Posted online, there's a there are categories. One is called e-books, and among the English books, there's one called Aspects of Impermanence. That's a collection of my major works on this topic, impermanence. You might want to take a look. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's in that.
The websites.
I just thought it was very strange to me when my mother passed away.
Oh.
And she worked in a monastery, Catholic, with the priest.
Uh-huh.
And when they let her put her tombstone up, they were, I guess the Pope gave her permission to put Mother Teresa on there, because her name was Teresa.
Uh-huh.
So, and then I thought, well, maybe, because my mother was really, really nice like Mother Teresa.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought maybe there was more than one Mother Teresa.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really a surprise.
Yeah, yeah.
Any more questions, everybody? If not, then maybe we let the guru to cut the welcome cake so everybody can share and enjoy.
Thank you.